Hi, writers. Welcome to our new episode on the craft of writing fiction. This is Jim Thayer. Once in a while, I come across a quotation about writing that I really like. Here is Michael Korda, the legendary editor at Simon & Schuster for many years. He said, "It is a frequently stated basic belief of book publishing that somewhere in the country, at any given moment, some unknown woman is writing a major bestseller, usually referred to as the next Gone with the Wind, at her kitchen table while looking after her baby." That's Michael Korda. Isn't that a nice thought? And I bet it's true. And here are a couple more short quotes. Famous criticisms of books and authors. This is Groucho Marx. "From the moment I picked your book up until I laid it down, I was convulsed with laughter. Someday I intend to read it." This is from the short story writer and poet Ambrose Bierce. "The covers of this book are too far apart." And here is Nora Joyce to her husband, the novelist James Joyce. "Why don't you write books people can read?" I'd like to talk about today the biggest mistakes writers can make before starting their novels. These mistakes also apply to us as we're writing, but today I'd like to talk about mistakes particularly applicable to writers before they start. The first mistake is believing this advice: write what you know. That's a mistake for us writers. Ken Casey, the novelist, said, "One of the dumbest things that you were ever taught was to write what you know, because what you know is usually dull. Remember when you first wanted to be a writer? 8 or 10 years old, reading about thin-lipped heroes flying over mysterious viney jungles toward untold wonders. That's what you wanted to write about what you didn't know. So, what mysterious time and place don't we know?" That's Ken Casey, the author of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and he is right. We should write about what we don't know. A second big mistake for people beginning that they make before beginning the actual writing of a novel is not being sufficiently bold in the plot. This is related to Ken Casey's comment. Plots for a novel are not real life. They're an exaggeration of real life, an amplification. They're bigger and bolder than real life. Our plots should be about something critical, likely the most important event ever to happen in the protagonist's life. Big things, often shocking, unsettling things, make up plots. Kurt Vonnegut said, "Somebody gets into trouble and then gets out again. Somebody loses something and gets it back. Somebody is wronged and gets revenge. Cinderella. Somebody hits the skids and just goes down, down, down. People fall in love with each other, and a lot of other people get in the way. A virtuous person is falsely accused of sin. A sinful person is believed to be virtuous. A person faces a challenge bravely and succeeds or fails. A person lies, a person steals, a person kills. I guarantee you that no modern story scheme will give a reader genuine satisfaction unless one of those old-fashioned plots is smuggled in somewhere." The mistake is not being sufficiently bold in our plot, and we should listen to Kurt Vonnegut and have big, bold things happen. A third mistake is not doing research. Let me suggest that if our story doesn't need some research, it might not be as interesting as we hope. It's likely that our plot would benefit from research, even if we don't know it yet. I'm reminded of this because some years ago, I interviewed a licensed private detective for an article I was writing. His working world was filled with things I didn't suspect and knew nothing about. He wasn't trying to parade his knowledge in front of me. It's just that his world was hugely different than mine. And from the things he mentioned were fascinating. This is true regarding many professions and many settings and many other elements we might put in our novel. We writers might not know what we don't know, so almost all of us should research before we start writing. And there's a side benefit from research. Things we find while researching will open up plot points for us. We'll find new angles and new obstacles and new advantages for our characters, new settings and other plot ideas. That researching will suggest plot to us is a major benefit of researching. So give the plot some thought. I'll bet there are elements in our plot we don't know enough about before we start our writing. A fourth mistake is not doing enough pre-writing plotting. I've mentioned before that there are legendary writers who don't do any or much plotting before they begin writing. Charles Dickens and Stephen King are among them. Stephen King says, "I distrust plot for two reasons. First, because our lives are largely plotless, even when you add in all our reasonable precautions and careful planning. And second, because I believe plotting and the spontaneity of real creations aren't compatible." That's Stephen King, and he is a master plotter. There is something in his DNA that allows him to create wonderful plots without having to think too much about them in advance of writing. Let me suggest, though, that with his skill, that his skill and creativity may be an outlier. For most of us, pre-writing plotting in advance, will keep us from making big mistakes as we write. These big mistakes include writing chapters we eventually determine don't fit the plot, or not having enough tension and obstacles in the novel. Even literary and romance novels need tension and obstacles. Plots that aren't sufficiently involving for the reader, or conversely, plots that are too over the top. Plot points that don't go anywhere, characters that don't add anything to the story. This seems so obvious to me that I don't want to go on longer about it, but we should realize that there are some folks who decide in the morning they want to be novelists and so start writing their novels later that morning. It's a mistake for almost all of us. We should plot in advance. How much plotting in advance? Enough to give us confidence we are on the right path. That's a squishy formula, I know, but it's something to keep in mind. And I don't think plotting in advance of beginning our actual writing of the novel will stifle creativity. There's vast room for creativity in every chapter and in every character we develop. And we can always change our plot if we get a bolt of inspiration while we're writing. Our plot isn't set in cement. So it's a mistake not to do sufficient plotting before we begin the writing of the novel. The fifth mistake is made by writers before they begin writing is not knowing writing techniques. You likely don't have to worry about this, that you listen to these podcasts and probably have read a couple of good writing texts such as Jack Bickham's Scene and Structure and some others, indicates you know the techniques that the lack of can doom a writer's prospects. Some poor folks, all enthused about writing, begin their projects without a clue regarding point of view, the importance of obstacles, how to develop characters, showing as opposed to telling, avoiding early backstory, BC to BC, scene plotting, and other critical techniques that you know and I know. They don't know that writing techniques exist, and they don't know they don't know about them. Because you are listening to these podcasts, I know you know techniques exist, and so we don't have to worry about it. We are learning. We'll get better. We won't make the big blunders in our first chapter that kill our publishing prospects. But some new writers do. The next mistake that we can make, new writers can make, is not appreciating the work involved. Let me be profound. Writing a novel is a big project. It might take a year. It'll take as long to complete a novel as it takes tradesmen to complete building a house. If you work for a living or run a household or are in school or are doing a lot of volunteering or are otherwise busy, it'll probably take longer than a year. We writers should be aware of this before starting, but some new writers aren't. And here's a good thought. If you have spent 3 weeks or 3 months writing your novel, and suddenly you just can't work on it anymore, a week or two passes and you haven't worked on it, maybe you're frustrated or maybe you've lost interest. Don't give up. Put it aside for a week or a month. You might just need a break from the work. Your interests might have changed to something else. Maybe it's spring and we like gardening and we want to be out in the garden. But your desire to write will return. Or you've taken up the bass guitar, and it's exciting. And what's more fun than laying a bass line like Paul McCartney? But your interest on writing will return, so don't think that if your interest has lessened, it won't return. It will. Or if you've been writing and you've become frustrated and so aren't working on your story like you earlier wanted to, that'll pass too. You'll knock out some good ideas. You'll work around plot problems. If you're frustrated and so have stopped writing, that'll likely pass too. It likely will. New writers might not know this. And when they get to a pause, they might just quit. It's a mistake. So there are the five biggest mistakes writers make in the early days of writing before they write their first word. Knowing about them in advance might allow us to avoid them, or it might allow us to accommodate them and work around them. The Wall Street Journal has a good article about technical tools that can help writers. The article was geared to executives regarding their need to write reports, but a couple of these tools might be suitable for us authors as time savers and thought organizers. This is from the article titled, "Do You Hate to Write? These Tech Tools May Help." The subheading is, "Stop relying just on Microsoft Word and Google Docs. Other tools can make your writing easier and better." The article is written by Alexandra Samuel. Let me say, we fiction writers don't hate to write. We love to write, but some of the article may apply to us. So this is Alexandra Samuel in the Wall Street Journal. "You wouldn't paint your house with a watercolor brush, and you probably wouldn't cook a four-course gourmet dinner using only your toaster oven. We recognize that different projects call for different tools, even if they fall under the same basic umbrella of, quote, painting or, quote, cooking. Yet that recognition fails when it comes to one pervasive aspect of our working lives, writing. Whether we're jotting down a meeting note, writing a memo, or drafting a 100-page report, we most often turn to that good old workhorse, the word processor. Don't get me wrong, the word processor has its place, and there's rarely a day when I don't make use of Microsoft Word or Google Docs. But that doesn't mean that a word processor is the right tool for every writing task, because writing isn't just one kind of work. There are many different kinds of writing, articles, emails, blog posts, white papers, books, video scripts, even PowerPoint presentation content. Using one tool for all of these is like plotting a rocket launch with a calculator. Even within a single writing project, there are often very different stages, from brainstorming to final editing, each of which demands its own kind of thinking and might benefit from its own kind of tool. To figure out what belongs in your writing toolkit, think about the different challenges you have when you're writing, because chances are each one of them would benefit from a different type of software. This is Alexandra Samuel in the Wall Street Journal. Her first problem writing is, I don't know what to say. And she goes on, whether you write a newsletter, post a lot or a little on social media, or just need occasional ideas for reports, finding something to write about is often the hardest part of the job. All too often, I think of something to write that I'm sure I won't forget, only to forget it. That's why it's essential to set up a system for capturing all the different ideas you have, or to even capture little phrases or comments you might want to use in a future report, article, or presentation. I used to keep all these random ideas in a tiny paper notebook, but flipping through page after page of scrawled writing made it hard for me to find the right idea when I needed it. So about 15 years ago, I committed to putting all my random ideas in a digital notebook instead. That's a program like Evernote or Coda that lets me quickly add a note on my phone or computer and provides a way to search through past notes without having to open a separate file to see each one. I have found that the more religiously you capture your ideas, the more ideas will come. That's Alexandra Samuel. She's recommending these for business executives, Evernote and Coda, but they sure sound promising for us writers who often get lots of sudden ideas for a plot or a character, and these sound like good ways to keep track of them and keep them organized. I've not used these, but they sound promising. Alexandra Samuel's second problem is, my ideas are all over the place. And she says, once you know what you want to say, it can still be a big challenge to get to a first draft, because often our ideas are a bit jumbled before we get them on virtual paper. Some people organize their ideas in the writing itself, but for many of us, it helps to start with an outline. I know people who still swear by index cards, sticky notes, or whiteboards, but I prefer to make my index cards and sticky notes digital by using something like a virtual whiteboard. There are all kinds of applications that can serve this purpose. Some are marketed as outlining tools, such as Workflowy, some as digital whiteboards, like Miro, and some as mind mapping applications, such as Coggle and MindMeister. What's essential is to find a tool that works like that collection of sticky notes. You want something that recognizes each idea or fact as a separate piece of information you can quickly rearrange on your screen, rather than treating all your separate thoughts as one big blob of text, the way a word processor does. You might find it especially helpful to work with something like MindMeister that lets you color code your thoughts, drag ideas into different areas of your screen, or draw lines and arrows to connect related concepts. By making it easier to rearrange your notes, these virtual outlining tools make it faster to go from a grab bag of ideas to a coherent outline. And unlike a physical whiteboard, it's a lot less likely to be erased. That's Alexandra Samuel. My thought about this, MindMeister sounds promising as we plot our to help us plot our novel. Alexandra Samuel's third problem, I can't get started. And she says, writer's block comes in lots of different flavors, but for me, there's nothing more daunting than staring at the blank page of a word processor, One trick I have is to open Facebook in a browser window and write a few paragraphs as if I'm about to post something for a few friends. It immediately feels less stressful and more intuitive. More recently, I've started enlisting the help of generative AI, artificial intelligence tools that can quickly generate a first draft from just a few words or a brief instruction. ChatGPT immediately replies with a draft, and while it won't be that great, for now anyway, it gives me something I can revise and work from instead of starting from a blank page. That's Alexandra Samuel. I don't use ChatGPT that way. I use it for research. Here is Alexandra Samuel's next thought, next problem. I can't get my thoughts down fast enough. And she says, when I was 12 years old, my mom promised me that I would one day thank her for forcing me to learn touch typing. And she was right. But as fast as my typing is, even I have moments when I can't get the words down quickly enough and find myself losing great turns of phrase. For many people, the solution lies in getting away from the keyboard altogether. It's now fast and inexpensive to dictate a draft into your phone or computer and then upload the recording to a transcription service that will give it back to you as draft text. Not only does this allow you to write as quickly as you think, or at least speak, but it can be another great strategy for getting past that first draft writer's block. Alexandra Samuel's next problem is, I can't stay focused. She says, one of the easiest things to do when you're writing is to stop writing. We tinker with our fonts, surf social media, check our email, or do anything other than write another paragraph. For those who are prone to distraction, there are writing apps like Ulysses and FocusWriter that specifically offer a, quote, focus mode designed to block out the other applications you might have on the screen and to offer a very simple text view that keeps your attention on your words rather than everything else. Her next problem, the author Alexandra Samuel's next problem is, I hate revising my work. She says, I know that all great writing is rewriting, but it's the part of the process I hate most. Word processors just make this tough job even harder. Anything you cut can be annoyingly hard to retrieve, and if you are trying to move sentences or paragraphs from one section to another, especially on long documents, you are in for a tedious amount of cut and paste. Once upon a time, I handled this problem by printing out my draft documents and cutting them up with scissors. I'd rearrange the sliced up pieces on the floor so I could figure out the right order. Then I discovered how to do the slicing up work on screen. Now I do all my editing in writing applications that let me cut a draft into paragraphs or sections and drag the sections around a document until I have the right order. My favorite writing application, Scrivener, lets me see a list of all those little slices in the sidebar, so I get an outline-like overview of my completed document broken down into component parts. That's the end of the article by Alexandra Samuel in the Wall Street Journal. I guess I'm stuck in the old school. I haven't used these things the author mentions. Maybe I should. They sure sound promising. And if you are a writer who is tuned into technology more than I am, maybe you should give them a try. I'm not averse to technology. I do use artificial intelligence for research. I'll type a question into ChatGPT or Google's Bard, and I'll get an answer. I don't trust the answer, but usually it's a good place to start. Technology changes so quickly, even for us writers. Some of the things mentioned in the article might help us. At the very least, we writers should keep up with the new technologies out there, learn about them. Otherwise, we'd still be writing with a quill pen on parchment. I know that some of our listeners are our seniors, and they are embarking on writing novels or short stories. Listen to this. Nobel Prize and Pulitzer Prize winner Saul Bellow published Ravelstein, his 13th novel, when he was 84 years old. Isn't that fantastic? That's it today from Seattle. I hope your writing is going wonderfully and that you're having fun. Until we meet again, this is Jim Thayer. Please keep tapping those keys.